Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Well, we have the author of not one, but one is not enough, two books on this morning, and we'll talk about them both. We'll talk about a book called The Peace Puppy, a memoir of caregiving and canine solace. These are really good books, by the way. And the other we'll talk about right now. I'm not single. I have a dog. Dating Tales from the Bark Side with Susan Hartzler. Good morning, Susan, and welcome to WGN.
Woof, woof. Thanks for the introduction.
So you are involved in dogs. I know you have strong feelings because you have a book coming out about this, actually, about therapy dogs. So you're involved with therapy dogs. But in addition to that, how else are you involved in the dog world?
Oh, my gosh. So my love and bond with dogs started at a very early age with my little mutt, Siesta, who was a Chihuahua mix. And I was the youngest of three, and Siesta was my little pal who I did everything with. She was very ugly. She used
Hold
to
on. Now,
I know.
I take some offense to that. I mean, you have a picture of Siesta in the book with you, and I would argue you both look very, very cute in the picture. Now, the name of the book, I'm Not Single, I Have a Dog, and you write at the beginning something I had no idea. Single women over 40 were more likely to be killed by a terrorist than get married. Now, is that explain how this is relevant to you. And does this bother you? I'm assuming it's true. I'll assume that. Is that a problem for you that you've been single forever?
Well, two answers to that. I don't feel single because I have a dog, and my dogs do everything with me. So, but I had to learn to appreciate that, and I had to learn to appreciate being single. So that statistic was something that came out when I was probably in my 30s, so I thought I had some time to still meet Mr. Right, but I kept meeting Mr. Wrong. But I'm a very good judge of character with dogs. I find the best dogs, and I train them to be good companions for me, and that's sort of my life now.
Do you think that if you were a guy, the book I'm Not Single, I Have a Dog would even be published? Do you think somehow, some way, and I don't know, that you're a woman, that this is more of a deal? You know, I think the term used to be spinster, right?
Yes, yes. Yep, I'm a spinster. I definitely think so. And when I say that word out loud, my stomach kind of does a flip-flop. So it does bother me on some levels. It's kind of like feeling like you were never picked, you know? You know, in grammar school, when you'd play sports, you got picked for a team, and I was never picked for a team. But actually, after a lot of soul-searching, what I realized is I really did this to save myself. I had a bad picker. And I'd always pick the worst possible man for me. So, they may have been good for friends, but they weren't husband and father material. Although they always loved dogs, so that was definitely something.
All right. So, would there be a possibility? Are you dating now? I'm getting personal, but this book is about that. So I'll ask: Are you dating right now? And if so, do you go online to find those dates?
Okay, so the book is actually my answer to all those questions. So over the years, and, you know, I'm 66 now, so I was in a generation where women didn't really stay single very much. or at least they weren't proud of it. I think now the generation, women are making choices to be single if that's what they want. But in my generation, if I heard one more time, when are you going to get married? I was in all my friends' weddings, and the question was always, when are you going to get married? And, you know, I did online dating. I did newspaper dating back in the day because, we didn't have online yet. I did, and this is all in the book, I did the video dating. I really tried. But what I realized now is I was living my life in the deficit, that I was missing something. So I had to embrace my singleness and love myself and in order to move ahead. Because it's always like I was looking behind going, where is he? Where is the man? Where is someone that's going to save me? And I have to save myself. And in rescuing a dog from the pound and going to lots of therapy, I learned to embrace the life I have. So to answer your question, every few years I try online dating, but it just, maybe it's my generation, it just doesn't seem to work for me. And I'm fine and content being single and doing things with my dogs. Now, if I met someone in my life doing what I do, that would be great. I'm open to it. But it's not the focus of my life.
So what if you met someone? And the reason why I asked in the first place is, what if you went out on a date with that person who said, you know what? I think you're great. And finally, Susan, and we'll talk about the wrong choices you've made, or at least some of them, after the break. But finally, you think, oh, this guy, he's a good boy. He's not a bad boy. Except one thing, that person doesn't like dogs. What would you do?
I wouldn't go out with that person. You know, my life revolves around my dogs. They're therapy dogs. They're actors and models. Seven, my 10-year-old boy, just did a commercial for a new pet food last week. You know, I take them everywhere with me. We go to a park every day. They go to, there's stores that allow dogs. I only shop at those stores, which in my next book, I do list all the stores. And, you know, it just wouldn't be, that's kind of my line in the sand. I wouldn't be a good fit for someone that didn't appreciate that. And they'd have to appreciate it, not tolerate it. They'd have to appreciate it. They'd have to be there with me.
All right. And historically, though, and you write about specifically, some, I assume the names were changed to protect the whoever it is, but you did choose some bad boys, and one of them, I'll just take one as an example, had a drinking problem. You knew that at some point, and you kept going, and then things got worse and never really did get better. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about how your dog helped you to make a decision in your judgment. And we'll do that when we come back. The name of the book, I'm Not Single, I Have a Dog. Dating Tales from the Barkside. Susan Hartzler is the author. We'll be right back on WGN. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Susan Hartzler is the author of several books with more on the way. This one is called I'm Not Single, I Have a Dog. Dating Tales from the Barkside. And I asked you about one choice. I guess there were several bad boys. Who knows? Maybe even more that aren't in the book, Susan. But one of those you write about, he had a drinking problem. You stuck with it. But then things didn't get better. In fact, quite the opposite happened to be true. Can you talk about it?
Yes. Well, I write about it. I mean, here's the thing. With this book, it's funny and it's also tragic. But I felt like I had to be honest. I couldn't sugarcoat my life. So I had to be honest to make a difference. And here's the interesting thing. I will answer your question. But since writing this book, I've had letters and emails sent to me from men who have the same issue with women. They're going to come in and save them and rescue them. And it turns out to be a nightmare. So, you know, what I had to learn was that I had to rescue myself. There's an old saying, like if there's a drowning person and you put your hand out to save them, they could pull you under. You have to do it the right way. And I had to go to Al-Anon meetings and go do a lot of therapy to get over this. And then I just embraced my singleness. So that's kind of what happened. But the alcoholic, yes, he ended up, you know, he was drunk one night and he beat me up. and there's other horrible things that he did. And
horrible things, we don't have to talk about them on the radio now, but they were horrible, and you write about them, actually.
Yes.
So,
yes.
So here's, were you at some point, first of all, concerned about the dog? And what you didn't write about that I saw, I read it, but I didn't see it, is specifically because I have been involved with domestic violence efforts to do something about it. And it turns out that one of the reasons why women get out is that they're concerned that the next thing this person will do or maybe has done is abuse the dog. Now, this person never did, at least if he did, he did not write about it, abuse the dog. He seemed to like your dog. However, were you concerned about that? And is that one of the reasons why you finally were able to escape?
Absolutely. So the situation where he beat me up, I had Blondie with me, and he said to me, "You love this dog more than you love me." And he actually lifted her up by the leash.
Hmm.
So that, seeing that and seeing that he did that, that was it for me. So you're absolutely right. It wasn't enough that he hurt me. It was enough that that the potential for him to hurt my beloved dog got me out of there. And, you know, honestly, it got me into therapy, which helped me with my life. So, you know, I needed to be in therapy. I needed to learn how, you know, how to deal with people like him. And it took a few years, but finally, after many tries of dating, I finally came to the conclusion that maybe not everybody is supposed to get married and have kids. Maybe some of us are supposed to live a different life and embrace the life that I have.
So I'm looking in your book now, and you say, then it struck me I could take this new positive attitude into the dating world, and then you hit bump and bump along the way. But along the way also, let's talk about Blondie being a Hollywood star. That was supposed to happen, but it didn't really, did it?
Poor Blondie. So one of the guys I dated was an actor, out-of-work actor, and he told me about a dog audition. And I just thought Blondie was the most beautiful dog in the world. So I took her to the audition. I hadn't even trained her to sit. I don't know what I was thinking, but I just thought she was so beautiful that they'd want to hire her. So that is a very funny scene in the book. And it's all true. I was there with all these trainers, and the trainers had all the accoutrements with them, the crates, the water, the treats, and I just had my dog on a leash.
And then the person who was holding the auditioner, one of them said something like, I don't remember the exact words, "Well, come on now, what else can your dog do?" Because Blondie was doing nothing. And your response was, well, something like, "This is it, but she's pretty."
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so the dog had to do a down and put its paws over its eyes. So that wasn't going to happen.
No, and that's a lassie move, you know? That's not easy.
I know. But, you know, poor Siesta, too. When I was a kid, I took her to it was like a dog show, but it wasn't a real show. It was like they had kids showing their dogs dressed up and that type of thing. So I took Siesta. I made her a bikini bathing suit. And I went with my friend who had a Pekingese, and I thought Siesta was going to win the prize, but the Pekingese won. So this has been something, a goal of mine my whole life. I see the beauty in my dogs, and I feel like everybody else should see that. And now with my first Australian Shepherd, I actually did get her an agent. Well, she got herself an agent, and she did a lot of things, and now my two Aussies that I have are following in her paw steps, and they're actors and models and therapy dogs.
She got herself an agent, so your dog was walking down the street and said, "Hey, you," or maybe made a phone call? How does that work?
Okay, so we were living in L.A. at the time, and we went to a lot of dog events. So I was at one dog, and Bliss, was her name. She was a beautiful blue Merle Australian Shepherd. And we were at an event, and this woman comes up to me and she says, I have a pet agency, and we'd like to have your dog in the agency. And my answer was, of course you would. She'd walk into her room and be like, I'm here. Where's my close-up? Oh, my gosh. She loved it. She was on Scandal. She gave the president a high five. She was on CSI. She did a music video. My favorite commercial that she did was for FarmersOnly.com, which is a dating.
There you go.
Yeah. And she was a talking dog in it. And I mean, people stopped and said, hey, is that the Farmers Only dog? So she was funny. So anyway, I got to live out my dream with that, and it continues. Seven just did he's my 10-year-old Aussie, and he just did a pet food commercial. So
why is it living out your dream?
Because I obviously wanted my dogs to be recognized and seen for the amazing dogs that they are. So I'm getting that recognition by them doing acting.
And all this time, still no guy. But dogs, famous dogs in some cases. But I want to ask you about the still no guy part of it. And we will also talk about the next book, The Peace Puppy, a memoir of caregiving and canine solace. Susan Hartzler is here on WGN, and we'll be right back. Last week, I talked about the top dog breeds in America, but you know what? I need to talk about the top cat breeds as well. So I'll start at number 10, according to the Cat Fanciers Association, the Russian Blue. Number 9, the Sphinx Cat. That's the cat that has no hair. Mr. Bigglesworth from the Austin Powers movies. Number 8, the Siberian Cat, a cat with a lot of hair. Number 7, the British Short Hair. Number 6, Abyssinian. Number 5, the little monkey of the cat world, the Devon Rex Cat. Number 4, the Exotic. That's like a Persian with very short hair. And number 3 is the Persian. The second most popular cat in America was number 1 at one point. Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons, no doubt, sang about the Rag Doll Cat. That is what the song was about, right? Maybe not. And number 1, the number 1 cat in America is an all-American cat, the Maine Coon Cat. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. The name of the book, I'm Not Single, I Have a Dog. Just like that. Tales from the Bark Side. Susan Hartzler is the author, and we'll talk about the Peace Puppy and what that is all about. You write in the book, in the I'm Not Single, I Have a Dog book, Susan, something to the effect of how dogs are wonderful company. They're great listeners, and they're always offering unconditional love. I don't think anyone who's ever had a dog would argue with that statement. But do you miss having a certain gentleman, whoever that may be, by your side? I mean, can a dog really replace, as talented as your dogs are, and they are, can that replace a human?
I don't think it can replace. I don't think it's an either or. But I think we all have our own life to live, our own journey. And not all of us are meant to get married and have children. And, obviously, I wasn't, or I would be. So it was a choice I made unknowingly by dating the wrong men. But I have to say, I'm so thankful that I don't have any of the men that I dated as a partner. So it, to me, I'd rather live single than be with the wrong person.
And these wrong people were like roller coasters, you know. Things would be up and then they'd be down, and maybe with some of them up again and then back down. Having a dog partner is more steadiness, I assume, in your life as well. But have you ever laughed? Be honest, just between us. Have you ever laughed hysterically when one of your girlfriends, you're out to lunch or something, and she is saying, oh, I can't believe my kids did this. They are driving me crazy. Or the kids are actually getting into serious trouble. And you're thinking, ha, 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 I don't have to deal with any of that.
You know, for a long time, for many, many years, when I'd hear that, I would get a pain of jealousy. And I hated feeling that. I couldn't really relate to my friends. I mean, I could, but I couldn't, because I really wanted that. I really did want that. But I didn't want to bring kids or to get married to someone that was going to be abusive. And I didn't want to bring kids into that. And if I had met a secure man who I could relate to and that was funny, yes, I do. I can't say I missed that because I never had it. But in my mind, I see how that would improve my life. But if a man's not going to improve my life, I think I'm better off staying single.
Well, and
does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And you write about it in a very upfront and honest way. I'm not single. I have a dog. Dating Tales from the Bark Side. But you've also written other books, including The Peace Puppy, a memoir of caregiving,
yes,
and canine solace. What is this book all about, and what motivated you to write this next book?
So the timing sort of overlaps in the two books, but this book is about the three. My mom died in the year 2000. Paige Turner's having a lot to say about this right now. And my father was suffering from Parkinson's. And so I left my fancy job at a travel PR agency where I was literally traveling the world, going to Fiji, going all over the place. I left that to move home and take care of my dad. And this was, you know, like I said, in 2000. So there wasn't a lot about caregivers talked about back then. And in fact, it's just now becoming a topic. There's a documentary called Caregivers that Bradley Cooper's doing. So there's a lot of information out there now. But like the Bradley Cooper series, this book isn't like a how to do it. It isn't like call this person, call it. This shows what it's like to become a caregiver for a loved one. I mean, in my case, it was my father. And it shows the toll that it takes out on people. And for me, having that dog was the neutral, safe place to go. So if things got heated or out of control with my father, I'd say, you know what, I'm going to take Baldwin on a walk. And I would just take the dog on a walk, gather my thoughts again, and then be able to handle the situation better.
Was this?
So I wanted to show that, and I wanted to promote Rescue in a Dog, because Blondie and Baldwin were both rescued.
Sure.
And I wanted to show, I'm an advocate for the animal-human relationship, and I wanted to show how you know, having a dog can really help you through that. And I also wanted to show people that were on the fence about what to do with their loved one, this is what it will be like.
All interesting and important information. Were either of these two dogs therapy dogs for you, really? Your own dogs?
They both were. They both were, definitely. Baldwin was my first therapy dog, official therapy dog, but Blondie definitely was an unofficial therapy dog and an unofficial actress.
Do you think that we don't even always pay attention? You're tuned into this stuff because who you are and what you do. But do you think that dogs forever have been doing this? And for the most part, they really haven't gotten the credit for just being dogs, for taking us out of our heads. As an example, caregiving, which is so incredibly emotional, so incredibly difficult for all sorts of many, many reasons, many of which you describe in The Peace Puppy, a memoir of caregiving and canine solace, but provide emotional support well before terms like emotional support dogs were even around.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's just recently that there's been research on it, and there's actual physical benefits to being with a dog. It can lower your blood pressure. It can add the oxytocin.
Yeah.
Which is the feel-good hormone. There's all sorts of actual physical benefits to having a dog or petting a dog or being with an animal. So I'm glad that finally there's some research about it, something that all of us dog lovers have known all along. But, I just think that for me, I mean, if someone's not into dog, because it sounds contrary, right? Because you have to take care of the dog too. But for me, having that that being that was always going to be positive and love me and taking care of that was what I needed in order to make it through the times that were difficult with my father.
And actually, we end up being caretakers for our older dogs as well. I want to ask you about that when we come back with Susan Hartzler, author of, well, a couple of books, including The Peace Puppy, P-E-A-C-E, a memoir of caregiving and canine solace on WGN. We're talking about not one, but two books. I'm Not Single, I Have a Dog, Dating Tales from the Bark Side with Susan Hartzler. Susan, if you were traveling all over the world, I don't know how it is that a beautiful lady like you didn't meet all these good guys. I don't get that. But you didn't. At least that's what you say in the book, and you write about that. We're talking now about The Peace Puppy, a memoir of caregiving and canine solace. Susan, as our dogs age, or cats for that matter, really, we become oftentimes caretakers for them. We're helping them to go out to go to the bathroom. We're carrying them maybe up and down stairways in our homes. We're making sure they're eating when they really don't feel like eating. And we're giving them medication. And in many ways, not every way, but I'd argue in many ways, there is an emotional toll. And it isn't all too different than dealing with a person that you are the caretaker for. What do you think about that?
I think you're absolutely spot on with that. But for me, it's a privilege after, you know, they gave so much to me. Just like with my father, it was a privilege to take care of him after he did so much to me. And I write in the book about losing Blondie and how the room was just filled with love after she was put to sleep. It was just filled with love. And she was my first major loss in my life. So she got me ready to lose my mom.
Hmm.
And, you know, my mom bought me my next rescue dog, Baldwin. So she left me a real life testimony to her love for me, which was amazing. So I think I do agree it can take a toll, but I think that they give so much of themselves. It's the least humans can do. And like I said, she actually prepared me for the loss of my mom.
So when you lost Blondie, did friends say, and you know what, I would argue, I don't know any data to support this, but I really do argue that the first loss as an adult of a companion animal is the toughest by far, somehow, some way. I'm not an expert on loss, so I can't explain why that's the case, but I do believe that is the case. Nothing really prepares us for it, especially if as a kid you never lost a pet. That makes it somehow even worse because this is your first experience with that. But then did you have friends or relatives saying, but it's only a dog, or has that disappeared?
No, I have that every time. And
really?
Get another one.
You still?
It's only a dog.
You still get that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And people don't.
Who are your friends?
Now,
what happens now?
I get a second dog when one of my dogs is four or five. Could I have a younger one? Just because the pain is so severe that I don't think I would get another dog. But if I have one, then I have one. And that other dog helps me through the pain and suffering of the other dog. But I totally agree with you. I think the reason losing a dog is, for those of us who are dog lovers like you and I are, I think they're part of ourselves. Like, my dogs to me are part of my heart. So it's kind of like losing a part of yourself, plus a routine. The routine that you get with the dog suddenly ends. You don't have someone that you have to get up and walk. You don't have someone that you have to feed. You don't have, and that routine can be very healing and can be a very healthy thing in life to have a routine.
Absolutely true, I'm sure. But getting over that, so you've had friends that have lost dogs. What is your advice you give them?
Oh, gosh. Basically, there is no advice I can give anyone going through grief. That's what I learned, because everybody has their own process. The advice I give is that I'm here for you. And, people open up to me because they know how much I love dogs, and they know that I'm not going to be judgmental, and they know that I'm not going to tell them get another dog. So basically, I just like to be with them and talk about stories of their dog and memories, things that we did together and that type of thing. But definitely I don't say it's just a dog, get another dog.
We only have about 2 minutes left. What is it about dogs that you have said several times this morning, I love dogs? That's clear. You read both of these books. It's clear. Why?
You know, that's a really good question. And I think for me, it's part of my DNA. I was growing up, I had a little dog, Siesta, who's in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And she really taught me about love. And, you know, going through my teenage years, she was someone I could talk to all the time. She was non-judgmental. She'd go on walks with me. I put her in my backpack and would ride my bike around. So she was just, you know, they're just amazing creatures. And I feel sorry for anybody that hasn't experienced what I've experienced with dogs. I call it a doggy sixth sense. It goes beyond what we see. It's, if you're open to it, you'll experience little miracles, especially in the therapy dog world,
mm-hmm.
where if you just open yourself up to it, they're very sensitive creatures, and they know when someone's hurting, and they know how to comfort. So basically, it's taking the lead from there and not trying to impose my humanness on the dogs, although some of my dogs have been more like humans. My current pack is dogs.
Or better than some of the humans you dated, which you write about.
Oh, definitely.
She says.
Definitely.
I'm not single. I have a dog. Dating Tales from the Bark Side. That's one book. And the second, which has a very different tone, The Peace Puppy, A Memoir of Caregiving and Canine Solace. Susan Hartzler is the author, and you have a book coming out about therapy dogs, correct?
Yes, I just finished it. It's with my editor right now, and hopefully you're going to do the foreword for it. So, because you've been in the therapy dog world yourself.
I have, and when you mentioned that, you know, it's interesting that some, not every therapy dog, but some therapy dogs can actually walk into a room filled with 10 people, and they know exactly which person they can help the most. It's just fascinating. You don't even have to instruct. Is that true?
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
It really is. And they know what that person needs.
Exactly.
Which is just like, you can't explain it. It's just not explainable.
So while the medical professional, and this has happened, is explaining what that person needs, the dog's already doing it. How do they know?
Yeah.
How do they know? Well, you'll write about that. And you have a title yet for that book?
The publisher gives it a title. I'm calling it Pause for Healing.
I like that. I like that. We'll see if that's the title or not, but for sure, we'll have you on the radio talking about it. Susan Hartzler, good to talk to you. According to the American Kennel Club, for the second consecutive year, the French Bulldog is the most popular dog in America, and I talked about that last week. But what I did not talk about are the trendiest other dogs, aside from the French Bulldog, in America. So one of those is the Kerry Blue Terrier, hailing from Ireland, moving up 25 places on the chart, from number 160 most popular to number 135. Why? I don't know. Some people say that dog is a great dog for people who have allergies. Another winner is the Nova Scotia Duck Tolling Retriever. Kind of looks like a small golden retriever, moving up from number 83 to number 69 on the American Kennel Club popularity chart. And the American Staffordshire Terrier, long considered a great family dog, moved up in popularity from number 95 to number 77. Those are the trendiest dogs. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.